Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 787. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, well, I am podcasting from the new desk installed in Stunt Granny Studios HQ. It feels pretty comfortable right now, and I'm pretty excited about this this development in this late in the game. Good God. So, speaking about developments, a development that I've got to admit I did not see coming. Logan Paul is going to be challenging Roman Reigns. It's Crown Jewel, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that is the main event of Crown Jewel. Now, I would say that, yes, nobody saw this coming, but then the Roman Reigns appearance on Logan Paul's podcast, I believe, was last Wednesday, which then featured Logan Paul after Roman Reigns leaves, starting to shit-talk Roman Reigns. Then on Thursday is when they had Triple H say, invite Logan Paul to SmackDown, and also have a response via tweet from Paul Heyman. By midday Thursday, it was pretty well known that this is what was happening. But that did not stop Dave Meltzer on Friday afternoon from tweeting out major WWE news incoming. Like, and people are just thinking, oh my God, did somebody die? Is somebody getting fired? More Vince scandal. No, it's the match that we've all figured out was happening by about Thursday, if you paid enough attention.
Oh, Dave Meltzer.
Logan Paul appeared on. Oh, go ahead. You're
gonna talk. No, there are always some amusing moments with him that always seem a little little tone deaf or at a minimum over exaggerated. Yeah, you didn't have all of that stuff happen for that match not to go down.
Yeah, no. And, you know, then of course, then Friday Night SmackDown, Logan Paul is confronted by the Bloodline and Paul Heyman ends up knocking out Sami Zayn. They announced the press conference. That takes place on Saturday in Las Vegas. And here we are, Roman Reigns versus Logan Paul in the main event of Crown Jewel.
I mean, I think that we had, at least in some ways, talked about the issue in and of the fact that we mentioned that Roman Reigns didn't have a whole lot of opponents lined up for himself.
No, he does not.
And Crown Jewel is always one of those kind of over-the-top events. Oh, yeah. And I mean, we talked about how they'd scaled it back some and made it more storyline-driven recently. But this one does. This matchup definitely throws it into that, you know, big, splashy name for the Saudi Arabian audience situation.
It can serve both matches, because I'm under the assumption that Logan Paul will be, certainly once we get, especially after we get past the Extreme Rules, will be likely be appearing on a number of SmackDowns. Roman Reigns will be appearing on more SmackDowns after Extreme Rules, although he is on this Friday show. They've got a spectacle match that they will be able to do some heavy promotion for. Interestingly, I actually had to look up what the status of YouTube was in Saudi Arabia, whether it's a country where YouTube is banned or not. In fact, it is not. In fact, Saudi Arabia is the largest user of YouTube per capita in the entire world. So that play a role here.
that very well could play a role. I mean, it's one of those things where it computes in my brain, and I'm trying to think of Is it 5 million YouTube followers that he has?
Oh, on YouTube, it might be more than that.
Okay.
Let me look it up.
But, I, the point that I was getting to, not the number.
He has 23.6 million.
23, but geez. And
that's insane.
I don't know a single one of those people, I don't think, that have a membership. And he has, there's 350 million people, so he's almost got 10% of the population? I mean, it's like 7.5% or something like that off the top of my head, and I don't feel like typing in the math.
Well, he does have followers all over the world, so...
But still, at least a little bit of context that it's roughly 7% of the U.S. is pretty out there. But yeah, he's a draw, you know? It's one of those ones where, despite me not being that familiar with him and maybe no one in my circle really watching him at all... He's out there, and he does a lot of stuff, and it's not surprising that they're going to use him in high-value matches moving forward. Like, he's going to wrestle more, but it's not surprising that he's taking on a part-timer's schedule. Like, I never expect to see him even do a Ronda Rousey-style run.
No, maybe if they paid him, he would, but I don't think that they can actually or want to afford what that would cost to keep him from doing all of his other endeavors to make a more regular appearances. You know, certainly not house shows or anything of that nature.
Oh,
but yeah, he's done incredibly well. You could argue he had the best match at SummerSlam if you want to make that argument. His match at his poor match at WrestleMania also was very good. He's undefeated. So it's not like he's totally undeserving. The one thing to me is it's quick to put him in a situation. You almost could have had him wrestle more and gotten some wins over the next 6 months to a year and then had him make a more serious run at the title. Where you actually feel like he might actually be able to win it?
I think that's the big point for me, is that, he doesn't have a chance, really, at this juncture. Like you said, like, if they had built him up and gotten him a few more key wins, obviously beating The Miz is a nice feather to have in your cap. I guess they could end up going. They could be heading this way anyway.
I mean, it's unlikely.
Yeah.
But maybe it's not totally out of the question. nothing is totally out of the question. But yes, incredibly unlikely. It's a match for Roman Reigns to win. We've already found out that he doesn't even have to worry about defending his championship in Survivor Series. So, that's more news we can get to later. Roman Reigns will almost certainly make it through the end of the year. Then there's day one on January 1st. Don't know if he'll be on that show or not. He'll definitely be at the Royal Rumble. Elimination Chamber was in Saudi Arabia last year. I imagine it'll be the same this year. And then there's WrestleMania. I guess they can stretch this out. They can make it, especially when they threw this in there.
There are not a whole lot of title defenses that you need for Roman Reigns between here and there, and if you stretch a feud out here and there, it's a pretty easy task. Because I think the Brock Lesnar bridge is is crossed for at least Roman Reigns related reasons here. It's an early matchup, but it should be a good one. And again, not really surprised that they went to that. One thing that did surprise me a little bit this week, for all the things that the announcers have called out recently that are maybe a little askew from how Vince would run them, I was rather surprised. I did not feel like the lights dimming out caught that much attention from the announcers. Am I mistaken? Was I not paying enough attention to the announcers?
I don't think they really paid much attention to it. There are weird things happening. There was the weird promo with the White Rabbits. Something about 9/23, which is Friday. They've been playing the song White Rabbit during commercial breaks and even at house shows, trying to get a little bit of a viral thing going.
Okay.
For something that's coming, and a lot of people believe that thing that is coming is possibly the return of Bray Wyatt.
Is he the last, like, notable free agent that's out there that, you know, didn't sign with AEW or, you know, go into business for themselves like Matt Cardona?
Yeah, I think that is true. I think he has stayed out of the limelight in most ways, other than a tweet here and there every once in a while, since, I think it was July 2021.
Yeah, he's been, and I feel like he had that, everyone mentioned he had some type of movie project not long after he was let go from the WWE, and even on that front, things have been kind of quiet. I don't feel like I've heard about any release date, unless it's already been released and I'm that out of it. A possibility, but I don't think that's the case. And almost any wrestling website would report if he was recording some type of other movie with his time.
Yeah, no, he's been pretty quiet. Triple H, in his interview with Ariel Helwani before SummerSlam, before Clash of the Castle, whichever one.
Yeah.
Was very complimentary of Bray Wyatt. But he did call him a creative genius who needs to be reined in at times. Which, well, that should be the job of the person in charge of the company. So, I don't know. I am not sure exactly what we're going to see. Some people are speculating on Alexa Bliss will once again be involved with Bray Wyatt.
Oh.
Did anything happen during the match with Bailey that I wasn't paying attention to? Is that when the lights flickered?
Yeah, the lights flickered because I.
Oh, that I didn't pay attention to that part then. No. Okay.
Yeah, it was specifically during that match, and Alexa Bliss was in the ring. And I guess...
Oh, that makes sense now.
That one was kind of interesting, just in and of the fact that they just got through introducing regular, normal Alexa Bliss. Who still carries around a doll. But at least she has blatantly said, this sells, so I'm keeping it. And... Hey, who can argue with that, I suppose? But they did, especially this week on Raw, really sold her mean streak and her being 5 feet of fury and everything that went along with that. I mean... It's been one of those ones where I feel like it's been years plural at this point that we've talked about how weird her career has been. In that she's never really received a... She hasn't had a sustained push in ages at this point. No, she's gotten the tag team titles with Nikki, and did she get them twice, I think, actually?
I think they probably did. Yeah, they've been them twice. That sounds right. I mean, that was. But their team was mostly, like half of it was in the pandemic era, I believe. And Alexa had still was doing a lot of a moment of bliss segments.
Just
talking. She had the host at WrestleMania 35 in 2019. At that point, she hadn't been wrestling for about a good 6 months. Maybe at that point, okay.
I have it pulled up, and it's NXT 13 to 16, SmackDown Women's Champion 16-17, Raw Women's Champion 17-18, and then I mean I don't even feel like I need to go into the header because we've talked about it. Limited in-ring competition and hosting roles, 2018 to 2019. And then teaming with Nikki Cross is 19 to 20. And with The Fiend is 20 to 21. So, yeah, she hasn't held a singles championship since 2018 then.
Yeah, no, she has not held a singles championship now on cagematch.net. Amazingly, she actually has had 100 matches since 2019. Which I don't know if I would have guessed that, because you know she had been out of action from, let's look.
Yeah, that
from September 26th to September 2021 to February to. So she was out. Yeah, she was out for close to 6 months. She was out for 5 months. Then she didn't appear again until May of this year. And she's been appearing consistently and working house shows since then. But yeah, no, let's look. In the entire year of 2021, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. She only had 19 matches the entire year of 2021.
Whew. Yeah. It's
and that was after the 2018 to 2019 period of inactivity.
Yeah.
And of course she wasn't wrestling much in 2020 really either after the Nikki Cross break up, because she was seconding Bray Wyatt most of that time.
Yep, yeah, she was out of, she was on screen, you know, it was another one of those, it's not bad to be on screen, but she also really wasn't wrestling at all situations. And yeah, if she does end up teaming with Bray Wyatt, I do hope that they keep her a serious singles competitor. Like, she's another one that they have been, and I mean, I think it's something that the top ladies have run out of people to contend with. And I would even dare say that she might have had a feud with Becky Lynch during that Raw championship reign. Back in 17-18, it would be a whole different dynamic these days.
Yeah, oh yeah. It absolutely would be, yes.
And even kind of a Charlotte thing, where I'm sure that they probably had matches at some juncture. That time period is so far, far gone that it makes a whole lot of sense to revisit things like that. And, I guess it'll be interesting to see. I suppose I expected Bray Wyatt back at some juncture. You know, even with Vince in control, I guess it seemed like, Yeah, I don't. You would have thought that maybe Bray Wyatt knows in his own mind that he needs to be reined in sometimes. Because why wouldn't you go to carte blanche AEW if that's what you really wanted?
I feel like there wasn't a serious offer. I've never
No.
gotten any indication that Tony Khan made a serious offer. Just like with Braun, it does not seem like there was a serious offer. It seems like Tony Khan at that point felt that they were just not needed for the price they would come in at.
Yeah, I suppose I can understand that a little bit. But yeah, I guess I'd still think that Bray Wyatt has a versatility in the ring that hasn't been explored because of how his character has been. I feel like I like him as a wrestler, but I'm not sure that I can point to any one match and I can go, oh yeah, I think that was, his real coming out party situation. And I'm not sure that he did have it, Like, he had so many goofy gimmick matches and he came out being indestructible, which it's good to have the Undertaker sit-ups and things of that nature, but you also you need to be able to take some offense. There needs to be some give and take in professional wrestling.
One key I think that they need to realize is Bray Wyatt should as the Fiend or any other incarnation should never be world champion. He should never be this.
No.
He should be an attraction. We've seen
No.
it in the ring. When that damn bell rings, he loses something. Everything that comes with him, all the hocus pocus and everything that comes with him, and the television that builds to a match, that can be entertaining. So you need to be putting him in situations where he can just be an attraction. You can do whatever crap you want, and not have your main championship involved in it, and not have it be the main event of the show.
I still think that you can run it as the main event of the show if you have that big of an attraction going on.
That I'll accept, but yeah.
But yeah,
But not, not.
I'm with you. Like, unless he does ride the line a little bit more, like I don't know how well the urn stuff would have played for The Undertaker later in his career.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't have played as well, and the period where they were doing the most of the urn hijinks was the era where he went about 5 years out of the title picture, basically. I mean,
Oh.
they would run him against Yokozuna. They got a shot or two against Bret Hart, but overall, he had not between December 1991 and WrestleMania in 1997. He was never the champion. I mean, by 97, he's still the Undertaker, but he was being allowed to do more in the ring. He was showing
Oh.
more vulnerability. He was sh using a greater variety of moves, and some of his work during that period is among his best against Mick Foley, against Bret Hart, against Shawn Michaels, against Steve Austin. That's some of his best work in that period. When he was allowed to, when he was basically, he was, and he's talked about it. He essentially wasn't allowed to be a good worker.
Oh.
He had to move at that snail's pace. He had to never sell or barely register moves and things of that nature. That was the character, and during the cartoon era, it worked. By the time we were out of that and moving on to a more serious era, he was allowed to evolve. The issue with Bray Wyatt is I haven't seen him be able to actually deliver that match the way that The Undertaker could.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad that it's not just my memory that doesn't really have Bray Wyatt match. Yeah. It is stuck in my head.
I mean his best match was probably the Firefly Funhouse against Cena at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think maybe would be one of his matches against Daniel Bryan. That would probably be about it. That would probably be the best in-ring wrestling match he was able to have. And that was against
Yeah, that's one of those Dominic Mysterio could have a good match with Daniel Bryan because Daniel Bryan kind of situation. We've kind of been hitting news more than actual review, and you hinted at it earlier, I'm kind of burnt on Bray Wyatt. Survivor Series got some big news this week in between recordings. So, Survivor Series now gets the War Games treatment here. And as far as we know,
yes,
it's one men's match and one women's match.
Yes, that is correct.
And
it does appear that they're going to do five, that it's going to be 5 versus 5. I think that's, I don't know if it's totally official, but in the article on The Ringer that and the interview with Triple H, that was what was highlighted to do as a 5-on-5. I don't think they ever mentioned even that the NXT ones were always 4-on-4.
Okay, that was the other. I was just gonna ask. I was like, I feel like we're doing one less person here recently, but I couldn't really remember right off the hop.
Yeah, it does seem like 5, and 5 works for the Bloodline, as long as we don't get the Sami Zayn turn before November, which I don't think we are. I think, actually, Sami Zayn screwing up in War Games is probably the impetus for them throwing him out of the group. I think that works, yes.
Really well. Yeah, it's certainly an easy way to get some egg on the Bloodline's face without having them really take a pinfall.
Because Roman Reigns, even in tag team, even in 6-man tags with the Usos, still hasn't lost. He still wins all the 6-man tags too. So yeah, so having that situation where that is literally the first time Roman Reigns has taken a loss of any kind in 3 years.
Yeah, I mean that seems like a good reason to have a beef with someone. This whole thing does seem to have been set up for a nice old Sami Zayn babyface run. And yeah, yes. There isn't any reason to pull that trigger right now. I don't think. Like,
I think the Sami Zayn Jey Uso dynamic is ripe for a lot more entertainment, especially when you have them together on weeks when Roman Reigns isn't there, so you get that slow burn. You know, all the moments of Jey Uso being annoyed with Sami Zayn, but Jimmy and Solo apparently liking him.
Yeah, the fact that Solo Sikoa has been on the roster all of a week and he's just like, nah, this guy is going to be better off for me. And then Sami Zayn not only, backs him up and saves his bacon in the match. So, Sami making all the right moves for everyone except for Jay right now.
Yeah.
Because even Roman Reigns seems lukewarm to him now.
Yeah, he's getting there. He's getting there.
Yeah, I'm not going to say he's really hot for him, but I think he looks at him less. He's looked at him less annoyingly the past couple of times we've seen them together.
Yeah, so no one wants to know. This bloodline dynamic is really fun. There's no reason to not keep it going until then. And with that, and with what we've already done, Kevin Owens on the other side is pretty obvious. Any number of top faces could end up on the face team. You really do have a lot of options to go for there.
Yeah, because, I mean, we got the Bobby Lashley, we got the Drew McIntyre, are kind of easy ones to put in there. And I'm trying to think of who else we could throw in there.
Matt Riddle.
Oh, yes.
Riddle would be good, probably be good in that situation. He's already had a lot of interaction with the Bloodline. Maybe then Nakamura or who else would be a good in that situation? There's a number of guys that they're pushing Ricochet right now.
Oh yeah, he could fill a spot potentially.
He can fill a spot. So yeah, the men's heel side is incredibly clear. And the babyface side, you have options. The women's heel side, that's more interesting because if you do go with the number five, five in the bloodline, so that makes sense. It
tracks.
that tracks. But your main heel faction on the women's side currently only has three members. So you need to get two extra people, and either in the group or they form an alliance with two other women, without them joining the group.
Yeah. I mean, Nikki Cross and Doudrop popped into my brain is an auto response.
I mean, if there's not going to be a standard women's championship, any kind of women, well, I mean, you gotta fill the card with other matches. But
yes. Yes, you do.
But if you want to put like Ronda in there, Charlotte in there, I mean, imagine that whether she's Raw Women's Champion or not, or Bayley is, Bianca Belair will definitely be on the babyface side.
That would be shocking, more shocking if she were not on the babyface side than if she were.
Yeah, she'll probably likely be put in the position of team captain. Now, once again, you could. If teams are going to be a mixture of Raw and SmackDown, you put Liv Morgan in the match, or Ronda Rousey in the match, or SmackDown people, or do you still want to have a SmackDown women's title match because there won't be a Raw women's title match?
Oh, yeah. It kind of depends upon what composition you want going into this thing, you know, and how you want how you want to fill out your card. Is a big determining factor in what way to go. Because you're right, if Bayley and Damage Control are one side, that does probably put the Raw Championship out of the picture. But you could still have a singles championship if you want to, you know, with the SmackDown ladies. And
so I probably would keep Liv or Ronda, whoever's the champion by then, out of the war game situation, and keep the. I don't know if the Damage Control really needs to add two members. So it means again, a loose alliance could be something you could do to go into it. Let's see, on the babyface side, obviously Bianca, Alexa, depending on whether or not she stays babyface or not, Asuka. Becky Lynch may or may not be back in time.
Yeah, so I was just wondering when she was supposed to be back from injury.
Yeah. It didn't sound like it was going to be a ridiculously long layoff, so maybe she'll be able to be back for this. And, of course, the ultimate wild cards, Naomi, and Boston's own Sasha Banks in her hometown. Possibly.
Yeah, I guess when I was talking about free agents, I guess I know that they're not free agents. They have still been curiously silent. I do believe, I shouldn't say silent, silent.
About wrestling. They were all over the place last week. Yeah. They were all over the world last week. You know, the country last week.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, you saw the picture of them at the Andor premiere. Like, just shut your pie
hole. From New York to Los Angeles, all over the course of a week. Yeah, they called in every favor they had to get to go from New York Fashion Week to movie for TV, to major TV premieres. Yes, I only throw them in only because because they're kind of out there and being speculated on, and because Boston is Sasha's hometown, and that would be a hell of a reaction.
And they do, although I guess that time of the year you can't really have too large of a venue. Unless you have something like San Antonio does with the Alamo Dome or whatever that is, that it's a basketball arena, but it fits some ungodly amount of people, like 50,000. Since most arenas are in that 16,000 area, like, you can't necessarily... Yeah, you're not going to be going to Gillette Field there to do Survivor Series.
No, I mean...
Outdoors November's going to be a little rough.
No, actually, the arena sold out today.
Oh.
TD Garden or whatever, so yeah. I was just wondering if when they... I assume they thought the floor plan before they put tickets on sale.
Oh.
although Vince was still technically in charge, maybe they didn't. Maybe that part would be kind of interesting, but.
Vince probably wasn't planning a Sasha comeback in her hometown, or if she did, she was definitely losing.
He also probably wasn't planning war games.
He definitely wasn't planning war games. That part would seem to be for sure. I guess, are you excited for it to be on the main roster? Do you feel like NXT is getting robbed of a specialty match? Anything like that?
I mean, I'm looking forward to it. It's definitely added something to Survivor Series. The brand supremacy angle definitely ran its course. It never, ever really made a ton of sense. But then when they moved the draft to October, although they didn't do that this year, and now, of course, with two titles unified, it doesn't really make any sense.
Oh.
The early years of it, from a logic standpoint, it always had issues of why 4 weeks out of the year do these people care what show they're on? But we got some hellacious matches out of it. You know, Brock Lesnar's matches with AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan, the first Charlotte and easily best Charlotte Ronda match took place at a Survivor Series during that theme. So, and then some of the team elimination matches. It was definitely it wasn't a complete and total failure, I'll say that. But it's ran its course, and the team elimination matches, they kind of ran their course in the 90s. You can bring them back every once in a while, and you can get a good one out of it, but a lot of times it wasn't conducive to having a really good match.
Yeah, my memory of watching those when they originally happened is not commensurate to... seeing some of the more modern ones. And I don't know if they built the stories better back then, because that would probably involve me watching entirely more TV than I really want to in research.
Yeah, I mean it was a novel concept. They only did four pay-per-views a year anyway. And Survivor Series and Royal Rumble were both the gimmick shows, so you really didn't. So you accepted it. It was something different. It was novels. A lot of those matches were fun, especially once again, when it's a new novel thing. But after 4 or 5 years, that's when they started to say, "Okay, we need to set. We need some singles matches with some stakes out here." or even some years they completely just didn't do any team elimination matches.
Yeah, I wasn't as bummed about them getting bumped off the card later down the line here than I was at first. It seemed like sacrilege, but I've definitely turned the corner on. Like you said, maybe don't have them all the time. If the stars align right, go for it. War Games does give you a similar vibe to Survivor Series, but there's a lot more that you can do with it. Because it's, in a lot of ways, it's a mini Royal Rumble.
Yeah, you still get the team concept. You still get you get two matches that each takes quite a bit of time.
Oh,
so you get that element out of it, and you do something different and something fun, wacky. You have two top heel factions to put in these things, so it makes sense from that standpoint, and it's a way to do a major spectacle without throwing out a singles match for a title too early when we're on the way to WrestleMania. So you can, you've got your spectacle match at Crown Jewel to get, it's a title match, it's a total spectacle. Then you have War Games at Survivor Series, and then there's no pay-per-views for the entire month of December. Then you can just kind of cruise through the early part of next year.
Yeah, cruising, especially for the main championships, cruising through the early part of the year is seems to be an easy task. It's getting the other ducks in a row that always seem a little bit tricky.
Because you got two Royal Rumbles, two Elimination Chamber matches. You got things you can mix and match, have fun with people, and get everything situated on the way to WrestleMania.
Yeah, in both of those matches, much like War Games, they are time chewers.
Yes, they are.
So it helps anchor a card and put a little fat around the attire there. Is there anything else to be said in that department? The War Game stuff?
I think we said a mouthful.
Was there anything that stood out on SmackDown outside of the Logan Paul stuff for you?
I thought the 4-way main event was fantastic.
Why was I thinking? I was, for some reason, I had it in my brain that the Solo Sikoa match was the main event.
Oh.
That's what confused me the most. I'm like, huh? 4-way match? And I'm like, oh, yeah. It has, I guess it makes sense to me. And again, I feel like this is something that that any variety of us have brought up. We weren't sure who the Usos were going to take on next. Ridge Holland and Butch are as good a choice as any.
Yeah, as far as the Usos have never wrestled before, that was a really good choice. Once again, they really worked well as a team. It was a lot of fun to see them do their thing, especially after. Amazingly, after Sheamus' performance at Clash at the Castle turned the whole group face, So that's without trying, without
Yeah, I mean it's amazing what best match on the card will help you pull off.
Yeah. So again, the only weird thing was fast forwarding to Raw. You've got the Brawling Brutes and Ridge and Butch, establishes babyfaces by the end of SmackDown, but then they do this. A 2-segment match with the Street Profits who are babyfaces on Raw.
That
made no sense to me. I mean, it's a good win for them. And once again, yes, you don't have a lot of teams to throw at them like that. Because you know, Alpha Academy was needed just to be in one backstage segment. And I guess you didn't want them to lose again. They lose so often. But it was a weird call right after you've got them pretty popular baby faces, you put them against another pair of popular baby faces. It was that was a weird call to me, but definitely looking forward to seeing Ridge and Butch against the Usos on Friday. Yes,
yeah,
or whenever I get around to watching it.
That was just a weird one all around, honestly, like you said. Because I'm just like, when I saw the Street Profits lose, I'm like, well, yeah, I guess they don't have anyone else to take this L right now. What was really the main thing running through my head in that moment. Because, it's still going to take some time to build up the tag team division. I do feel like they've paid marginally more attention to it here, adding Hit Row and the Brawling Brutes, and it's good for Ludwig Kaiser to have his running buddy Giovanni Vinci with him now.
They can be the team with an Imperium, the tag team with an Imperium. That works out great. Yes.
Yeah, so they are starting to fill out the tag team roster a little bit more here, but none of them have gotten a lot of main roster exposure, so that will be a good thing that will, I'm sure, come along here with a little bit of time. So, this was one Top Dollar kind of surprised me, especially with the gimmick where he had, two people on his back and he was carrying someone on his chest in a World's Strongest Slam position. That was
that was
a feat.
That was definitely a feat. So that's very good. And again, Hit Row is coming along, so that's good.
Oh, yeah.
He's got another team. Another team you can run with and to break up the monotony that has been the tag teams on both sides of the aisle. Although not necessarily helping out Raw on a regular basis in any of the teams we've mentioned.
Oh yeah, because they have kept Hit Row on. Oh, both of them, honestly, on SmackDown for the most part now.
Yes.
Raw has seemed to manage, though. I feel like we've talked about how deficient SmackDown has been, so I suppose there's some way to keep them a little more interesting if they have the better tag team division on the shows here. That was a quality match to be had there. Seth Rollins, Bobby Lashley leads off Raw. Another very good match with an ending. I guess I'm not really surprised. It seemed like the Matt Riddle, Seth Rollins stuff was going to continue to roll on here. And this costing Mr. Rollins a championship match is a surefire way to continue a feud.
Correct, yes. And then Seth Rollins getting involved later in Matt Riddle's business, leading to them having an an altercation in the back where Seth Rollins finally broke and challenged Riddle to a match at, you know, anywhere, anytime, anywhere. And Riddle shot back, Extreme Rules, Fight Pit. Which the NXT Fight Pit that we've only seen twice. And was a hell of a monstrosity of a of craftsmanship. It'll be interesting to see how they put it into an actual full arena, because that was a complete product of having no fans in the building when they did it.
Yeah, I wonder if they can lower it onto an existing ring kind of situation. Or if they're going to need to have something off to the side in a regular arena to have that go down. I suppose it'll be interesting. I kind of forgot that was a pandemic special.
Yeah, because that thing was huge. I mean, it pretty much took up the entire... Didn't it like take up like almost the entire floor of the... Of the CWC or what have you?
Yeah, it kind of, to me, looked like, you know, it was similar to an octagon. I don't feel like it was actually eight-sided. It took up a deep, you know, at least to me, a ring-sized, a ring size. A regular wrestling ring size. And what, WWE is supposed to be 20 by 20, so 40 square foot or so. Yeah, it's got to be in that neighborhood. And you can't, well, I mean, I guess they're accounting for two rings with more games. So, you know, we might be able to fit them side by side. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it right now. I guess you could probably... You know, you would take down the ropes to the ring, and you could drop this thing from the ceiling. I feel like, yes.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Is that just use the mat as that mat, and just kind of drop it in there, and have some type of connection in there to keep it locked to the mat. So yeah, you might need to do a little formatting. But, yeah, we shall see how they end up doing it. I hope it isn't a out-of-the-arena style match.
Yeah, no, that we had our fill of that, and those don't go well when you actually have people in the arena only having to stare at a screen during the match.
Yeah, as much as I don't mind doing that for shorter time periods, an entire match is a little rough to take in that department. Yeah, Kevin Owens, Austin Theory involved in a second straight distraction match.
That did happen, yes.
But, you know, I guess all of these were in service of storylines continuing, so it wasn't too bad. Talked about the Brutes and Street Profits match. They seem to be omnipresent now at this point. Is Judgment Day reeling you in with any of their more recent antics here?
It feels like a more complete group. They're also actually getting wins. Amazing how that can help.
Yes, that is dead horse territory around here. But I definitely agree in this situation. Judgment Day was put in a bad spot to lose their birth feuds, basically. And it's just like, yeah, doesn't do you any favors. And they have definitely been racking up some W's. They may be of the tainted variety, but, W's nonetheless. And it always helps out.
So once again, we'll see what happens when Dominic is wrestling more. We'll see what happens when they do get Dominic and Rey in a match against each other. That will be a very big test of both Dominic and the viability of Dominic as a heel and the viability of the Judgment Day as a heel, as a heel faction. I'm definitely open to giving them I don't know if I prefer like this, but a second chance. Because it really did feel like they were just losing all of their big matches. Especially after Edge came back.
Yeah. It was a little rough to see them losing that many matches in different incarnations too. Like it wasn't just one of them taking the L's. Like when everyone's catching the L's, it's a super bad look. So yeah, they are moving them at least in a positive direction these days, and that's a good thing. I guess the only other thing to talk about maybe is the Dexter Lumis shenanigans with the Miz.
Oh, this is so much great stuff right here. This is so much fun. I love every second of this.
It is seriously campy shtick that they got going on.
It really is, and the knife coming through the canvas, which you don't really see them do. I know he had to cut the mat with something, but you don't really see them going with knives very often.
No, it usually mysteriously tears somehow, or there's just like some weird split in the mat for reasons that never fully get explained. So to see someone actually create the hole is a move that I enjoyed quite a bit.
Yeah, no. It was a lot of fun, and Miz's promo about punching a minion, and it's all so much fun, and it's a really cool thing. I love every second of it. I think this is definitely the right kind of camp to create a lighter moment on Raw, and of course Miz is just gonna book the scenery, so it's great stuff.
Anything else to cover before moseying on out of here?
I think we're pretty good there.
Yeah, I will admit I actually watched Rampage this past week, but it was on actual Friday, and I don't really remember a whole lot of it. Rampage fast.
Well, no, I probably will get around to this week's 2-hour special episode going as Grand Slam Night 2. So you might want to check your DVR about that one.
That's
because I think it might be split into 2 episodes.
Oh.
2 1-hour episodes back to back.
Well, I will be sure to check that this coming Friday. Then that leaves me at the good old Bell Time beer situation here. This past weekend, I went to Oktoberfest at Zaftig Brewing, but I also went down to Wolf's Ridge Brewing. Was having their 9th anniversary. It was the beginning of their week of beer specialties. And this one was an oak-aged Oktoberfest, and it does have a nice little oaky finish to it. And yeah, it was a good beer to have during the show. It's only 6%, so it is not too too hard on the alcohol in that department. And I love a good malty beer that does not involve a whole lot of hops. And Oktoberfest beers are right up my alley. Add in a little hint of oak in there, and I'm still in. So this is a general advertisement for your local brewery's Oktoberfest beers, especially if you're not a hop head. That is the suggestion from Matt DeFrango11. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.